Hey, Scott, do you remember that old show, $100,000 Pyramid, when at the very end you'd give one word clues and you'd try to guess what it is?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that? So let's do that and let's see if our listeners can figure out exactly what we're talking about.
Who our partner is.
Who our partner is. Okay, I'm going to start with the first one to get us rolling. Relay.
Trails.
Three loops.
That's more than one word.
Hyphen. There was a hyphen.
Overnight.
And party in the village, all hyphenated.
Friends.
So any guesses? I'm sure they've got
it's obvious.
It's Ragnar Relay.
Run Ragnars.com.
That's right. And they're doing it on the trail. They've done it on the road. They're bringing it to the trail, and it's a lot of fun.
You get your best friends together. You go up to one of these races. You can get $80 off if you go to our partners page and click on the Run Ragnar banner. And you go up, and you can enjoy the weekend with your friends.
And not only that, it's glamping. What was that? That's one word we left out. What was
glamping? Glamping. You know, I think you should probably go to runragnars.com and just find out what glamping is. I know that there's a concierge involved.
Oh, that I like.
I don't think I've run an ultra that has a concierge. Oh. I think that's probably the reason why we need to go do it.
Scott, think back to when I paced you. I was your personal concierge.
You're my personal masseuse, not a concierge.
So run Ragnar Relays, Trail Rail. What is it, Scott? Say
runragnar.com or just go to our partners page. That's probably the easiest way to get
there. That's easier than what I just did. So go there, save $80, click on the banner, and go out and have some fun. Hey, Scott, you've heard of Peloton before?
Yes, I have.
Now, Peloton has a full body workout, an intensive body workout for you.
It's called Tread. And, Don, I need to teach you a little bit about Tread. I went to their Peloton store, and I'll tell you what, this thing is amazing. It's more than just a conveyor belt, right? It's more realistic. They have this gigantic display that as you're working out, it shows mountains and trees or cities where you can make it really a virtual running thing. The other thing that you can do is they have classes, live classes that you can schedule to go do on your own time. So you can see an instructor that's motivating the whole time.
So you're telling me it's convenient. I don't have any excuses. Whatever my schedule is, it fits my schedule.
Right. And I don't know if you've ever used those other conveyor belt things and you need to increase the incline or increase the speed and they have those little buttons and you have to hit it like 10 times.
Sure.
These have dials.
Ah.
Very easy control dials. You turn it up, turn it down, turn the incline up, turn the incline down. And the best part is they have financing available. It's a full body workout. It's not just going on the conveyor belt. You jump off. You can do, it has you do push-ups. It has you all do all sorts of dynamic workout
stuff.
So
let me ask you, Scott, you checked it out. You went to the store and you got on one. What'd you think?
First of all, the tread itself, it feels like a real surface. It's amazing.
Well, you can get $100 off accessories for a limited time if you go to One Peloton. That's O-N-E Peloton, P-E-L-O-T-O-N.
Two O's. Path Projects, you go to our partners page and click on the Path Projects. They are great people, great gear, and great supporters.
Just how great, Scott? We were doing 20 hours Western States, and we chose the gear to wear for this, and it was Path Projects. This is the shirt we're wearing.
It's also the shirt we wore for 22 hours of pre-recorded podcast content.
That's right. And when it comes to running, running's not hard. Not as hard as doing podcasts for 20 straight hours, so the gear is really going to be pushed. But I know the seams are right, I know the material is right, and I'm excited to see how it performs.
It's great. Those people that are wearing Path Projects out at Western States, that's one variable they're not going to have to worry about.
I think I'll do this. I think I'll see the people that are smiling at the end, and then I'm going to check to see what kind of gear they're wearing.
Pathprojects.com. Support them because they support our community.
Go to pathprojects.com, go to our partners page, and click on the banner and head over to their store for a great deal and a great set of gear. Hey, welcome to another edition, a special edition, an annual edition of Trail Runner Nation. We call it the prognostication.
You don't call it anything. We call it the prognostication podcast.
Let me try that. Prognostication podcast. Yeah. And we have featured, as always, the master of prognosticating.
AJW. Hey, AJW, you just flew in for this podcast, didn't you?
I did. And thank you guys for accommodating
It just so happens there's a race tomorrow on Saturday, too.
Right.
Thank you for accommodating me. He just made his way over and nudged his way in between us, didn't he? Brought his own headphone and microphone.
That's Andy's personality. He kind of squeezes in.
That's what I did. I found my way in.
Hey, so how many years have we done this, AJW?
Oh, I think we've done the prognostication podcast 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. And if we took your track record, how are you doing? I mean,
we never did do a check, did we?
No, we just assume he's right.
Yeah.
Well, the years that I was running and we did the prognostication podcast, my record was terrible because I always picked me.
Oh, okay.
But since I've stopped running, I think I've done okay.
Yeah. So, you know, in baseball, you make the Hall of Fame if you can bat 300. So if you get one out of three right, that's pretty good.
I think I'm doing all right. One out of three.
So another interesting year, not only for podium finishers, but personalities and accomplishments across the field.
We've talked about there's 369 stories to be told starting Saturday morning. We're not going to go over all 369.
We could.
We're going to pick some out, and hopefully they'll be interesting.
Hey, and let's mention where we are. We're at the aid station, 675 High Street, where we're going to be doing a streamcast for 20 straight hours with a lot of pre-recorded, which is good. But that's the ambient noise here that you hear, that rustling, the hustling and bustling. That's just Auburn at this time of the year. Statesmas, isn't that right, Scott?
Oh, my gosh, and it's an amazing spot here for those of you who are planning on coming in and visiting us. They've got a bar with about a dozen beers on tap. They've got shoes. They've got a actual aid station tent. Crowley says they're even going to have authentic aid station food.
Yeah, they're going to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches quartered.
Mm-hmm.
And like Scott likes to say, they're going to have boiled potatoes that you can dip in salt.
Hey, Andy, how does this compare to the actual tap room?
That's a great question. I mean, you should have saved that for the end, Scott. Yeah. That is a showstopper.
I wish the tap room was this nice.
Okay. Hey, we also want to mention the streamcast that's coming up. It's going to start at 3 p.m. on Saturday. We'll be streaming live from the aid station. Sorry, I'm getting tap room. And you're welcome to drop by and say hey, and especially at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
Don and I would appreciate someone else to talk to. We're going to get on each other's nerves, I'm sure. We want to make sure that everyone knows we have had some sponsors, some partners that have helped us produce this thing.
We have
Suunto, we have Lakey, we have Exoskin, and we have Path Projects. And in conjunction with the Trail Animals and also the aid station. And you can't see him on the camera if you're watching the streamcast, but we have Bob Crowley over here who is in charge of the Trail Animals, and he's the master producer. He is the one that has plugged all the things in to make it work.
Hey, before the race gets started, Scott, we better start this podcast. AJW, where do you want to kick this thing off? With the females, the males, or some stories of interest?
I think I'd like to start with stories of interest, actually, if you don't mind.
There's some interesting ones.
There really are some interesting stories, and I mean, I'm excited to talk a little bit about the podium and my thoughts about some dark horses and some sentimental favorites. But for the stories of interest, sort of speaking broadly first, there are a record number of overseas runners in the race this year. Depending on any sort of late last minute wait list traffic, it's as many as 80 overseas runners. 80 out of 369. I haven't done the math, but that's a big contingent.
It's a fifth.
Yeah, it's
fifth over a
of
fifth.
The field. And I think you could go back not very far, 8-9 years ago, when it was maybe 20.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an incredible story. Many of those overseas runners have now been here several days. They're getting to know this place for the first time. It's a real, real indicator of the international flavor of Western States.
Can I mention just one thing? We actually went to the international banquet last night, and we got to meet a lot of these racers, their crew, their pacers. Some of them came over with an entire entourage of people. And I was talking to some of the guys, I think they're from Australia, and they were talking about how this one guy goes and he races a lot in Scotland, and he said he will show up at a race in Scotland without a pacer, without a crew, And he'll say, hey, I'm running alone. Does anybody want to join me? And he says, throngs of people just are willing to jump in and crew for 30 hours or 40 hours and pace him. And I said, you know, that's good to know that this culture does not have boundaries. It doesn't matter if you're racing in Scotland or Australia, that our community really steps up and helps. I love that story yesterday.
And so I'm really excited for Western States to roll out the red carpet for these international runners. It'll be fun to see them out on the course, see all of their crews. It'll be a blast. So I think that is one sort of broad story. Another broad story, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, is that of the starters, of the 369 starters, 280 either have never run Western States or have only run it once. The vast majority of the starters have run it zero or one time.
Hey, let's hypothesize why that might be. Is it because the people that are running it for the first time have been trying for about 5 years and they have five tickets in? Do you think that might be a reason why there's so many first-timers?
I think it's got to be. I think the lottery is structured in such a way now that it is really a steep pyramid, and I think you do get a lot of first-timers. I also think that perhaps there are runners who realize there are so many people who want to be in the race that once they've done it once, maybe that's enough. I don't know. I'm sure people go put into the lottery again and again and again. But when you think about that many first-timers, and therefore that many first-timers crews, and that many first-timers pacers, and that many, you know, it's very interesting. You know, I'm going to spend some time on Saturday doing parking patrol. And it's interesting to, you know, work with overseas crews, be used to driving on the other side of the road, you know, just doing these winding dirt roads up to Duncan Canyon or something. So I think that's a really interesting story, like the international runners, in a kind of big picture way.
Yeah, and you know, there's never anything more exciting than doing something your first time. And so when you have so many first time coming with that kind of enthusiasm, it just spreads and it's contagious.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It probably will add an interesting flavor to the electricity, I like to call it, in Squaw starting tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's already up there now, Scott.
So here's something that's also, it just made me start thinking, even though there's 280 that are running it for the first time or never, they have an advantage because of the aid station volunteers at this race have been doing this for decades.
30 years in some cases.
And so they have that to rely on. Are those people going into those aid stations and those aid station volunteers helping them out and giving them some advice and encouragement?
Another story, AJW. What is a story of interest?
Speaking about some individuals, Kyle Robideau, a runner from the East Coast, who's completed a handful of 100 milers. I met him last year at the Vermont 100 at mile 88 of all places. He kind of walked up to me and tapped me on the shoulder. He's blind, legally blind. He could see in his younger years. He's had a degenerative condition. So he's gone blind, but he's legally blind, and he's running the race from Squaw to Auburn with guides the entire way.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some very experienced guides, Scott Jurek, Chris
Mayo. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Both of whom have guided marathon runners, road marathon runners in big city marathons like New York and Boston and so forth. So he's got a team of guides. He's got a crew, and he's running as a blind person. And he would be, were he to finish, the first blind person to complete Western States. Kyle Robideau.
How does that work? I mean, this is a trail race. There's roots, there's rocks. It's not the most technical 100-miler out there, but there's a lot of obstacles. Mm-hmm. And even if you are following somebody, you're apt to trip, right?
I encountered Kyle at the Yeti 100, which is in southwestern Virginia. It's late September. It's a mellow 100. It's mainly on kind of double track. And his guides are, it's got to be a stressful job. His guides are behind him. They might touch him on the shoulder a little bit, but they're not tethered or anything. And they're just talking constantly. Route to the right, dip to the left, go down this, there's a right turn up here, we're passing a runner, go to the right. So I have to imagine, and this is why it's nice to have people like Scott and Chrissy there who know the trail, but you know, their sections, you know, Western States isn't an overly technical course, but there's some sections, just think about the snow sections.
Yeah.
You know, oh, watch out, there's a snowy part, or, you know, he just pokes holes down falls down. So that the stress on the guides has got to be significant, and there's a lot of verbal attention that's going on.
Do you think they've got a chance to train with one another? Did Scott and Chrissy get out there with Kyle?
I think they have trained. Gotten together a little bit and trained. I mean, not for a big race, but I think they are familiar with each other for sure. And mind you, it's not Scott and Chrissy are the names that I recognize. There's a whole team and of many people that are experienced in guiding runners who can't see.
Yeah, I imagine that it would be, as you know, you could do 25 miles as a pacer or the 38, but I think it would be difficult to even do 10 or 15 with that kind of much verbal communication.
Yeah. You need a mental break. Yeah. You really do need it. And when you think of the nighttime, of course, the nighttime portion doesn't make a whole lot of difference to Kyle, but it will make a difference. It will make a difference to the pacers.
Yeah, sure.
And the guides. So when you think of going down Cal Street, you know, and some of the windy, twisty turns and a couple of those creek crossings. So that's a fascinating story, number one. Another fascinating story is Dave Mackey.
Sure.
Dave Mackey is a multiple-time top 10 finisher in the race, including 2004, where he finished second to Scott Jurek. At the time, he was as close a second-place finisher to Jurek as there had been. It was in his first ever 100. As a result of a tragic accident outside of Boulder, he ended up having his leg amputated. He's come back to running. He ran the Leadville 100 last year, and this year he's coming to run Western States. And he would be the second person with an amputated leg. Amy Palmiero Winters was the first in 2010, I believe. And Dave would be the second. And he's got his family here. It's an incredible, incredible story of determination and grit and coming back. You know, he spent about a year after his accident attempting to rehab the leg and had a series of surgeries and eventually just had to come to the conclusion that it wasn't going to happen. And so Dave Mackey's return to Western States has got to be one of the great stories of this race.
Do you think he had a chance to speak to Amy, who successfully navigated Western States before?
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, but I don't know that.
Yeah, but
be good to ask him.
So many of us have only done what we do because of those before us, and we've stood on their shoulders literally to get to the end of the race.
Yeah,
and so I imagine they probably combined resources.
Yeah,
and if you're listening to this podcast, we'll make a little teaser. We're going to be talking to Dave Mackey, and there'll be three or four little clips during the 20-hour streamcast where we'll be talking to Dave Mackey about his return to Western States and how emotional that I'm sure it is.
It's got to be. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, there have been only six people, all men, who have finished the race 20 times. Two of them have finished it all in under 24 hours. Mike Pelichatti, 20 times, and Tim Tweetmeyer, 25 times. Mm-hmm. The other four, Charles Savage, Dan Williams, Jim Scott, and who's the fourth, the most recent one? You guys remember? Jim Scott, Dan Williams.
I'm just amazed all the information you keep in that.
Charles Savage.
There's no notes for this man.
Yeah. It'll come back to me. Nonetheless, Scott Mills of San Diego is attempting to become the seventh man to finish the race 20 times. The amazing story about Scotty is his first finish was in 1982.
Wow.
So were he to finish, it would be a 37-year gap between his first finish and his 20th finish. And I think most impressively, every year he didn't get in the race. And he was not a top 10 guy. Uh-huh. He was not somebody ever who was getting automatic entries, you know, for example, like I was for 7 years. Uh-huh. He had to fight and claw. Back in the years of the two-time loser, I think he had something like six consecutive times where he was a two-time loser. Every year he wasn't in the race, he came, he volunteered, he worked aid stations, he worked net control, he did trail work. He has given so much to this race, and I have to say there won't be a dry eye in the place when he gets around that track on Sunday morning.
Well, two things about Scotty Mills. Number one is he is a race director at San Diego 100 as well. And so he not only has volunteered here and given to the community, but also to the community at large. And number two, if you're ever wondering if it's really Scotty Mills, tell us about the Scotty Lean.
It doesn't start at the beginning. It's only in the latter half of the race, right?
Scotty is definitely a leaner. I remember the first time I saw the lean, and I kind of made a scene out of it, sort of shouted across the track, "We got a leaner!" Interestingly, Dan Williams, another 20-time finisher, had a famous lean as well. Scotty, it hasn't happened every time, but it kind of starts usually or on the way down to the river. He sort of starts to tilt to the side a little bit. It's a gentle tilt at first, and sometimes by the time he gets to the track, it's a full-blown kind of 90 degree. I don't really know the physiology of it.
It helps him make the corners easier on the track.
Hey, I was coming into ALT and I saw this gentleman running, and he took it's a single track trail. There was no passing him because he had both sides of that single track taken care of.
It was, I now have to really, really kick myself in the butt for the one 20-time finisher I forgot. It's a guy, some of you guys may have heard of him, named Gordy Ainsley.
Obviously, that was an easy one to forget.
Sometimes I have, subjective amnesia when it comes to Gordy. So Gordy's the seventh, the sixth, and Scotty will be the seventh. So I'm just thrilled about that. Scotty and I had an exchange earlier in the month, and he asked, if I would be around to kind of come up to the White Bridge and come down with him. In fact, his last two finishes have been since I've finished running the race, and I've jogged in with him both times. It's just a remarkable, remarkable story. And 20 times, I mean, I think the days of 20-time finishers may really be over, just given the fact of how difficult it is to get into the race. I mean, it could happen, but we could see the last 20-time finisher for a long, long time and be really a historic moment.
You know, I read that article that you wrote on I Run Far that you talked about the possibility of other 20-time finishers. And I've got to tell you, AJW, you made a case where it could happen, but you also made a case that I might be able to leap over the moon in a single bound.
Right. Yeah, it was a little bit of a stretch, right? Could Ian Sharman get 10 more top 10s? Yeah. Could Megan Laws run into her 70s,
Which she probably could.
Which she probably could.
And Ian probably can. So speaking about Ian Sharman, we also did a few little pre-records with him. He'll be on the streamcast. His is pretty remarkable. 10 times... this is his 10th running, and if he completes it, which he should be able to very easily in with his capabilities, he will have run 10 Western states in 7 days.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
Yeah, he will. He will have the wheels would have to completely fall off for him to not have the aggregate 10-day record. I mean, he'll beat Tweet. He'll beat Skadden and I. He'll beat Ann. He'll beat everybody by a long shot.
Yeah.
Yes, in less than 7 days, he will have done all 10. And 10 consecutive top 10s. Doug Latimer's the only man to do that, and then Bjørg Alstrøm-Smith and Nikki Kimble. So it's just extraordinary. And, I mean, I think we're all going to be pulling for Ian. I think he runs the race with such comfort and such confidence and knows the course so well and manages whatever conditions come his way. It'll just be fun to see. So right there, those stories of Dave and Kyle and Ian and Scotty coming to the track, those will just be wonderful, wonderful moments in this race. No doubt about it.
Well, I'm gonna take a position for Scott and I, and on you're about to do your predictions.
You're gonna put words in my mouth?
Yeah, well, you'll appreciate it once I'm done.
Usually I take them from you. So
we're going to go for our top 10. Somebody that's a shoo-in on the top 10 male, and we're going to go with Ian Sharman. We believe he'll be there. So that's where we stand. See if you can do as well as we have.
All right, way to go, guys. You're going way out on a limb. Yeah.
We take a lot of risks here at TRN.
I think.
Can I make another prediction?
Sure.
I think that Walmsley is also going to be in the top 10.
Okay. And I'll make another prediction. Good chances we spend 20 hours on this podcast.
Not awake, but here.
And maybe not broadcasting. So, AJW, take us down the road. Males, females, whatever you want to do.
All right. So, well, I've done a little bit differently this year. I've got podium for each.
Okay.
Female top three, male top three. I've got two dark horses, a male and female dark horse, and then my sentimental favorites.
Mm-hmm. How fun.
And so I'll start with the women, and I really think...
Wait, can I just pause again
yeah.
and reiterate?
There are no...
He has no notes.
No notes.
If you're watching the streamcast, he has no notes. This is just in his brain.
Look at the top of his hat. Did he write that down? He's a headmaster.
I've been school. Looking to see if he has something written on his hands or his arms. He learned something from his students about cliff notes or, I don't know.
Scott, it's taped to the bottom of his beard.
That's why he keeps drinking.
Thanks, Bob. At least one of us, we're keeping him honest. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, I think on the women's side, I think Courtney DeWalter will win again.
Yeah.
And I think given the cool forecast, cool conditions, I think the 1647 course record could really be threatened. She is that good. I mean, she's got the second fastest time in the history of the race anyway from last year, which was a hot year, I would say. And she had no knowledge of the course. She had never been on the course. You remember when we had her on the podcast, she was like, yeah, AJW, can I talk to you about a couple of things? I mean, she knew nothing about it and just came and blew it away with a 17:27. So I think getting those 40 minutes could really happen. And so at the risk of ruining the drama, I think not only will she win, but she'll get the course record.
So what is the course record currently?
1647.
That is the target. If you're going to be following the race, 1647, right. Ellie Greenwood holds the right. The
she
fastest
got,
course.
She got that record in 2012. And
with a bear.
Remember, it was a cool year. With the bear. And is the only woman to go under 17. So
and wrestle a bear and win the race.
And win the race, yeah.
So she got a bear and a cougar.
Yeah.
I went back and forth on the second place, but now that the conditions seem to have stabilized, I'm going to go with last year's second place finisher, Caitlin Gerben.
Oh.
I think she is on point. She's trained hard. She, too, has benefited from the course. She hasn't over-raced coming into this event. And I think she races smart. She's not going to chase after Courtney or anybody else who goes off the front. She's going to run her race. She really races like Tweet always said we should, which is the race starts at Forest mm-hmm. Hill. I wouldn't be surprised if Caitlin was in sixth, seventh place by Forest Hill, maybe third, fourth by the river, and reels them in and finishes second.
Hmm.
My third place finisher is going for her sixth overall finish, fifth silver buckle. Really is one of Western States' shining lights, and there are many. Is thrilled to be back at the race, never takes the race for granted, and that's Casey Lichtai. I'm giving Casey a third place, and I know this is probably an unusual pick. There's quite a few younger runners with stronger pedigree than Casey, but I think when she values this, I think when the intangibles come into play, when there's a little bit of battle, especially on Cal Street, she knows how to run the race. So my podium is Courtney, Caitlin, Casey.
Nice.
And Casey has the advantage of a little pixie dust, right? She keeps that in her fanny pack.
You know, what makes Casey so tough? Because she trains in the flatland. She's not like she lives at, 8,000 feet and just does mountains all day.
Well, when she trains in the flatlands, she hits it hard. I mean, she'll do a 30-mile run at 7:15 pace.
Wow.
So she has an aerobic engine, and then she really picks her spots. She has a training ground about an hour away. It's called the Bluffs. I think it's a bluff that goes down to a river, and she does repeats on it, mm-hmm. up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. She comes out to the Memorial Day training camp every year and gets a lot of bang for her buck on 3 days of training. Mm. So she is one of those people who's proven that you can get a lot with a little. provided you have the volume. Now, her volume, she was injured a couple of years ago, but her volume has consistently been in the 4,500 to 5,000 miles a year. Mm. I mean, that is volume that is really, really hard to match. Now, one could argue, well, it's on flat, you know, it's easy running and so forth. It's still volume. It's still a cardiac load. It's still an aerobic load. And when the race comes, she's ready for it. So her training has been on point. She hasn't raced hardly at all. She's just raced for fun. And this race has a special grip on her. Mm-hmm. And frankly, she doesn't want to lose that grip again. I remember the first time I met Casey, which was my ninth running here, and I was thrilled that she was here. And she started out kind of fast, and I ran up behind her in the high country, and we jogged along for a little while and just struck up a great conversation and been friends ever since. So maybe it's a little bit of a sentimental pick, but I wouldn't, let's just put it this way, I wouldn't want to have Casey breathing down my neck going down Cal Street or from the River Inn.
Or chasing her.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, and what about dark horses?
Well, the dark horse... The dark horse on the women's side. Well, first, my sentimental favorite.
Oh, yeah.
First, I got to go with my sentimental favorite on the women's side, and that is Eliza LaPierre.
Now,
she's a sentimental favorite because she's a Vermont gal. She spends an awful lot of time on the treadmill or slogging through the snow in the wintertime. She also has five top tens here, has a DNF that was really rough on her, and like Casey, I don't think she quite has the front end speed, you know, to run a sub 18, which I think, given the cool conditions, the top three women are going to have to go sub 18. But I do think she has the potential, if there's any carnage to be reeled in, if there's any chink in anybody's armor, she has the potential to really just drive it home. So I'd like to see her in the top five. And if any of those first three, if for some reason they falter, Eliza's going to be there.
You know, she reminds me, the way you describe that, of Jeff Browning. Just patient, sets back, and he's going to be there in the top 10, even the top five. And if anything happens to anybody, he's there to swoop in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Ian, in one of our pre-recorded sessions, talked about Jeff Browning, how they lined up at the race one year, and they looked at each other and they said, we have an advantage because we have the potential to make fewer mistakes today than the rest of the field because of their experience and knowledge of the course. And I think Eliza has that advantage that she can make fewer mistakes than some of those front runners.
That's a great example. The people who make the fewest mistakes sometimes end up being there when the field starts to crumble.
Yeah.
You know, one year, and this has nothing to do with anything, but an interesting tidbit, and if you're listening to this and you're into tidbits, I spoke to Eliza and she did not, from Squaw down to Auburn, use the restroom once, didn't pee one time.
Wow.
How do you manage that? What happens? I'm ready to pee by the escarpment. I mean, the gun's going off and I gotta, finish up.
Wait, hold on. I'll cross the starting line in just a minute. I'll be right back.
Okay, another sentimental or dark horse? Okay, dark horse.
Dark horse, running her first 100, a short distance, steep hill specialist from Idaho, Brittany Peterson. Have you guys seen Brittany Peterson's results?
Very strong.
Brittany Peterson, she's been here a week. She reminds me of some of the runners who've come here that are just kind of wide-eyed and excited about the whole thing. And I just have this feeling about her, given the races that she's done, her attitude, that she's from Idaho. I like people from Idaho. Yeah. I used to live there. Yeah. I think she has a potential to surprise people as a dark horse.
Yeah, and there are so many runners out there. For us to leave some of the names that are at that starting line off, it's very hard. And it's really unfair of us to have you just handpick some, because we can't have a 9-hour podcast because we have to get ready for the 20-hour that we have coming up.
Right.
I mean, there's Lucy Bartholomew that's going to be out there, and she's, anything can happen with any of them. They make 10 spots for a reason.
Lucy, Amanda Basham, Camelia Mayfield. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The women's field every year for the last 5 years has gotten more and more.
I think the women's field has been more competitive in the last 5 years than the men's.
And more exciting in some cases, because there's more to watch.
I think of Corinne Malcolm, for example. She was a top 10 last year, ninth place, and she was a lottery selection. reminded me of Kat Bradley. I mean, is there going to be a Kat Bradley this year? I mean, in 2017, she got lightning in a bottle. I don't. When we did this podcast, there was no mention of Kat Bradley, and she just nailed it. Could Brittany Peterson be a Kat Bradley? I don't know. Could one of the other runners be that person? It could happen. That's why they won. That's why they play the games, as they say.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good. And on to the men. Top three men.
So I have to give my prohibitive nod to Jim Walmsley.
Yeah.
And taking note that I think this will be the first time since 2003 when both the male and female winners are repeat winners. In 2003 was the last time Ann Trason and Scott Jurek repeated in the same year. I think Courtney and Jim are going to repeat. I think Jim will have a test. I think the fact, though, that he knows the course so well after three runs here, he had an incredible race last year. He's training smart. He's still running his classical off the front style, but I think he's going to be controlled. I think he's going to be focused. I think he's going to run his race. If people go with him, if people don't go with him, knows what he's doing. I think also, over the last 2 years, he's really dialed in his nutrition. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, as you all know, is one of the keys to this race.
So we've seen him go off to the front, his off-the-front style. He's just running for broke, and he's out there just pushing his own limit. And he's going to find out what happens with the rest of us as we watch the race roll out. But we've seen him recently just collect the Bob Fordyce's record, the 50-mile.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we've seen him mature as a runner and start to execute and roll his race a bit different than just out. It'll be interesting to watch him this year at States.
And I think that that's all played into his confidence, where, you know, early on maybe he didn't have that type of confidence. And I think that he's coming in with a very strong sense of self-esteem and knowing what it takes to win the race, and the ability to know that he can do it.
I think we shouldn't ignore, too, yeah, the Bruce Fordyce 450 miler, but also the Olympic qualifying time in the half marathon in Houston. I mean, he ran a 104 flat on the dot, the qualifying standard. He was training in November, December, you know, these incredible, like, short 20 by 400 track workouts, you know, really working on flat foot speed. That pays off here. Mm. That pays off. Or yeah, we've got canyons, we got things we're going through. But you betcha, once you get up to Green Gate, if you have some flat foot speed, you know, and I think he's only improved that part of his running in the last year.
I watched a section where it was a video on YouTube where somebody was analyzing Jim's gait, and it was a side view of him coming from Bath Road into Forest Hill, and they said that he was running, I think, a 7:30 pace from Bath Road. Now, granted, this is on pavement, but I mean, and his form was just
beautiful.
like a 10K or half marathoner.
Yeah, he just floats.
He doesn't shuffle.
No.
He does not shuffle.
He literally flies. You know, I mean, Hoka made the right bet on him, because it's time to fly. It's time to put Jim in a pair of Hokas.
Yeah, yeah.
I think second place is going to go to Jared Hazen, who is a Flagstaff guy. And not for the obvious reasons. The obvious reasons is, you know, he trains up there with those guys, and he's part of the group that trains up there. But I think people forget that as an 18 and 19-year-old, Jared was a podium runner here at Western States. He's actually, even though he's still a young kid, he's actually got some pedigree at this race. Long before anybody heard of Jim Walmsley, at least as a Western States runner, Jared Hazen was running top three here. He's smart. He's not going to get sucked into Jim's pace. He may go Jim's pace if Jim's pace is comfortable to him. He ran really, really well at both JFK, was only a few minutes off Jim's course record at JFK in much worse conditions, and ran a really, really solid Lake Sonoma, which we know is not always an indicator of success at this race, but can be an indicator. So I think, too, he's not overtrained. He's not injured. I think both Jim and Jared are showing the experience of coming in on a peak. And I think that that's going to pay off, especially as the jockeying for position takes place after Michigan Bluff.
Doesn't Jim train in Flagstaff now?
Yeah.
So do you think that they train together? I would assume.
I know they train together. Yeah.
Okay. So
they know each other.
They know how to play off each other on this race.
Absolutely.
If Jim takes off, Okay.
Like you and I, Scott.
Yeah.
If we were in this race together.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And then for my third, I'm gonna go with the another Cougar man. I'm gonna go with Ryan Sands, the 2017 winner. Ryan is back again. He has a fire. He's kind of like a Casey figure, I suppose, on the men's side. He's been running this race a bunch of times. He's had some success, some tremendous successes here. He's also had some failures here. He knows what to expect. He focuses really clearly on it, but he doesn't obsess about it. And I think he'll be really, really measured. I mean, what we saw in 2017 when he won was similar to Andrew Miller's win in 2016. He's like, I'm going to run my race, and I'm just fine with that. I don't think Ryan is running to win or nothing. So there might be some other fast guys who are running to win or nothing. I think he's going to run within himself. And I think if there's a podium spot to be had from the River Inn, he's going to take it.
Yeah, yeah. That's outstanding. Oh, so that rounded off our podium. Now do you have some sentimental favorites?
So my sentimental favorite, this guy has been second, third, fourth. He's from Utah. He runs like just so smart, so sophisticated, so kind of open with a smile on his face.
Very recognizable.
Mark Hammond.
Oh.
Mark Hammond is my sentimental favorite. He just embodies what it means to kind of grind it out and grit it out. And I just think if there's a guy who deserves to have a good day, it's Mark Hammond. Is that not who you thought I was going to say?
That's not who I thought you were going to say. And I'm not going to say who I thought you were going to say.
I know who you thought you were going to say.
Yeah. Don and I know each other too well. Okay. What about the dark horse?
So say the guy that we are thinking, would you, to make us look good?
I don't know who you were thinking of.
Okay, well,
but whoever it is, they're not my sentimental favorite. So screw
them. It doesn't matter.
They're your sentimental favorite, but you're not going to say it, so whatever. Dark horse. I'm going. You guys probably watched him run a little bit at the 50 mile and 100K record. Patrick Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Reagan. Now the big question mark on Patrick Reagan is the hills, right? He comes from Georgia. But he's got foot speed. He's got foot speed. He's smart. And similar to Casey when she was first starting out, he is just sucking up the wisdom and the knowledge from the elders in the sport. While he may make first timers mistakes because it's his first time at Western States, you know, you can't control that. He's done everything he can in an attempt, kind of like what you were saying, Ian and Jeff were talking about, to if a newcomer could ever figure out a way to minimize his mistakes, they would do it by sucking information off other people, right? Mm-hmm. Like when we were newcomers, we'd talk to Tweet and Tom Nielsen and Craig Thornley and these guys who run the race for a long time. That's what Patrick's doing. And I think he's got such foot speed, and with mild temperatures, I really think he's got a shot to surprise people. Not a lot of people talking about him in the pre-race, which I'm sure is totally fine with him. But because of his just pure speed, you know, pure road 100K speed and things like that, I think he'll be ready to rock.
And toughness, because I watched him at the 100K challenge there with Hoka, and he was just steady. I mean, it was getting hotter. He just kept going. His pace was the same. His gait was the same. And importantly, his attitude was the same. He was the nicest guy to pass. Not that I passed him, but he passed me. He would high five you. He'd say, how's it going? He would give you some of that energy that you were trying to throw to him. And I just admired him for that and became a fan at that point, saying this guy is really, really cool.
Yeah, hey, Andy, you've been in the top 10 many times. How does that pressure, is that pressure something that you hold on your shoulders, or are you able to remove the pressure of expectations of finishing well?
In my experience, and it was a while ago now, but the pressure actually motivated me, but also scared me a little bit. It was, and mainly it was, the pressure was scary because I didn't want to fail and then not be able to come back. So I was so in love with the race, you know, after finishing it five times and six times, that the pressure was all about just coming back.
Yeah.
I think that in this day and age, we have several repeat top teners that we haven't mentioned. Kyle Pyteri, Paul Giblin, Mark Hammond, we have mentioned, Cody Reed. I mean, the field is both on the men and women's side is filled with 8 of the 10 top 10 from last year, and several of those are multiple top 10s. You know, it is, whether other races like to admit it or not, being top 10 at Western States is absolute badge of honor. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who that's like the focus, like it was for me and like it is for Ian, the kind of the focus of their entire year of training. Whatever else they're doing, you know, I need to be in my top shape when I get there. So I think the pressure can be motivating. And if you let it debilitate you, if it becomes nerves, then you're in trouble.
Yeah. So we mentioned some sentimental favorites earlier. We said Scotty Mills, and we said, help me here with some of the
Eliza.
Eliza LaPierre, but on the men's side, Dave Mackey and Kyle
Robidoux
are some sentimental favorites of not maybe finishing top, but to watch in the race.
They are.
Do you have any other dark horses or sentimentals?
Did you see it?
Mr. Crowley.
Sorry.
Okay. Go ahead. We've got a few kinks. I'm buying.
Breaking Bad. Breaking Bud. Breaking Bad too.
Did we mention this was a live podcast? Yeah. We have an audience here, and
the only way we can keep AJW speaking is refill his glass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a strong international contingent. Gediminas Grinius, for example, from Lithuania
he's been
a top fiver.
Say that name again.
He's on top five all name team for sure.
Yeah.
Gediminas Grinius.
Wow,
you don't know Gediminas?
That's a great name.
Yeah, Gediminas Grinius. He's been a top fiver here.
Don't
before.
Tell me you knew
who
he was.
And I mentioned Paul Giblin already. So international. Francesca Canepa on the women's side, probably not a top tenner, but likely to be the Masters 40 and over winner. So many stories.
Hey,
so many stories.
Andy Jones Wilkins, I think I've read some things that what's the oldest standing record at Western States?
Well, it's the 50 and over men's record by Doug Latimer.
And it,
1843.
Is there a threat this year that somebody may?
Well, you know, Dan Barger has run the race 11 times. He lives on the road up to Roby Point. He's in the race again this year. I think he's always a possibility to go after that record. He has run that time before. Admittedly, he's run that time when he wasn't 50 years old. Mm-hmm. But with the benign conditions forecast and, with his experience on the course, I think he's probably going to have his eye on his watch. And, you know, he probably won't be obsessing about the splits up until Forest Hill. But if he gets to Forest Hill and it's, 5:30 in the afternoon and he can get to the river by 8:30, then I think Latimer's in play for sure.
Hey, Andy, yeah. I have a question for you. So we've seen the weather forecast and it looks like it's going to be cooler than it can be. Is that a threat? Do you think the people up in Squaw tomorrow and Saturday morning are thinking, I don't need to worry about heat, and they could get themselves into trouble? Or is this just a Christmas gift for Statesmas?
Well, I think it could be both. Mm-hmm. What could potentially happen is that people kind of overdress at the beginning. It's going to be 30 degrees at the starting line. Mm. But the truth of the matter is, half a mile up that hill, you're sweating and you might as well just have your tank top and shorts on. And so I could see some people making some wardrobe mistakes at the beginning just because they're freezing at the starting line and they're not used to being freezing.
Or if you need a jacket and gloves, get yourself up there and you'll have your pick.
I was going to say, about half mile up, you can have all sorts of puffies.
All sorts of cool stuff. I think if people have done what they're supposed to do and done their heat training, it's still going to come in handy. I think what we've learned is that the carnage will be less. Mm-hmm. I've heard other prognosticators say no, because it's cool, people are going to take more chances and there's going to be more carnage. Mm. I think the history suggests otherwise. I mean, in my experience in 20 years in this race, when it's been below 90 degrees in Auburn, you've had less carnage at the front of the race, and frankly, you've had a higher finishers rate. Mm-hmm. I've joked that I think the race could seriously run out of silver buckles this year. Mm. You know, I hope they don't.
You brought some of yours, didn't you, to help out?
You can hand them out.
But you know, I think that people are relieved. You know, but you always should come to this race thinking it's going to be hot. And let's face it, Western States heat is different than heat in other places. So while we have many, many, many people coming from all kinds of different places and they've done their sauna or whatever else, it's even if it's 88 degrees on the canyon walls of El Dorado, it's still going to feel hot, and there's still going to be, you know, heat radiating off the canyon walls, and you're going to have to deal with that. So it's still going to be a factor, but you know, from my experience, and unfortunately I didn't get to run in too many cool years. I didn't run in 2012, which I really wish I had, because it was such a PR year for so many people. I think it's going to be you know, I think it's going to add an exciting dynamic to the race. And honestly, I think it could create for some of these folks like Kyle and Scotty Mills, you know, an opportunity to do some things. Dave Mackey. I mean, I'm sure Dave has in the back of his head 24 hours.
Sure.
Yeah. He has to. I mean, this is a guy who's run sub 18 on this course, right? He has to have that in the back of his mind. So the conditions made, and mind you, he's not going to make any mistakes.
None.
Dave Mackey, he's not going to make any. So he's not going to be running for the top 10, but he's not going to be making any mistakes.
Sure.
So I think that's what's going to make it fun.
You know, I think it was Jimmy Dean Freeman at some point way back in this podcast said something that if you take the temperature in Auburn on race day, add 10 degrees, that's what it's going to feel like in the canyons.
And that's true. And that's true. So if it, and if the forecast is true, where it's just 84 degrees in Auburn,
it's still 94.
It's still 94 degrees.
That's still pretty
dang
hot.
Pretty hot.
Yeah.
There's no getting around that. So let's go back to a couple of these names that we didn't disclose. Who were you thinking about, Scott? Because when AJW said he's from Utah,
Jeff Browning.
I was right there too. I really thought it was going to be Jeff Browning, so I didn't want to not disclose that name. And now here's a gal that I've had a chance to meet at my office is Cecilia Fiore. I believe that's how you say her last name. What a talented runner. What a fantastic personality. From Italy. She lives in New Zealand now, from Italy, but she's done so well at so many races. Last year, F5, and I think she is so new to the sport and has done so well so quick. There might be a surprise in there for us.
I agree. And watching her run last year, she runs happy.
Yeah.
She really does run happy.
Let's talk about that for a minute. What advantage do you have by running happy?
Well,
huge advantage. I mean, that's what Casey does. And watching Cecilia as a relatively new runner and from an international background, I was really surprised talking to people at aid stations, kind of just being bubbly and taking her time. It was really, really noticeable. Of that group of top 10 women, that she was really having fun. Now, Lucy was also, until she wasn't. You know, Lucy, and I think she would admit this, the wheels kind of came off on Cal Street for Lucy, but she was having fun at Robinson Flat and having fun at Michigan Bluff and having fun at Forest Hill. And I have a feeling with a year under her belt, a year of experience, a year of age, she'll be running happy and fun too. But absolutely, Cecilia ran fun. And this is part of why I think Brittany Peterson is a potential dark horse, is she runs fun.
Yeah.
And by the way, I need to go back to Browning. I'm not shortchanging Browning. Oh. I've known Jeff Browning for 18 years. And you remember on this podcast when he was first in Western States, now 4 years ago. Remember, this was a guy who had trouble getting into the race because of the structure of the golden ticket system. It didn't really favor a 100-mile guy. He, you know, didn't really, and was self-admitted, didn't really have the raw foot speed to run a fast, flat 100K. His opportunity finally came to get in, and I said, you guys watch, he's going to reel off the carnage. And that year, he was 16th at Michigan Bluff, and he finished fourth. Ever since then, he's put on a master class of what to do at this race. I fully expect him to do that. The reason I didn't mention him is he's not, in my opinion, a top three contender. I don't really have a whole lot of sentimental feelings about Jeff. I've known him for a long time. He's a buddy of mine, and you know, I'd rather have sentimental feelings about Mark Hammond, who's a little bit, you know, who needs a little bit more love. And certainly Browning's not a dark horse because everyone knows who he is. But I mean, you could if you're filling out your little top 10 bracket, put Browning in there, put Charmin in there right now.
Yeah, and a fun guy to watch. He is John Nichols came on this podcast probably 9 years ago. and talked to us about Western States rabbit hunting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you're following this race, he's one to kind of put in the Ultra Live sign up list on our webpage.
Put on your list.
And watch what Jeff Browning can do between Forest Hill or Michigan Bluff and the finish.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm not done about Cecilia because okay. Did you realize she has a background in rock climbing? So there's some discipline there. To do that, you have to have patience. And that transfers over to the sport, I think. Mm-hmm. Oh, but yeah. Also, she's a mathematician and she has a PhD in quantum physics.
Crickets. Do we have a cricket button on that board?
Oh, no, wait. Quantum physics. So she's smart.
Yeah, but get this.
And she's friends of yours?
No, she's not my. Oh, okay. No, I'm friends with her. She's not friends with me.
Hey, I'm glad that we had the headmaster finally validate that quantum physics, a PhD in quantum physics, means that she's smart.
But get this. I asked her if she could. She's a mathematician. Can you do math after 70 miles? And she said no. She can't even do math. Yeah. A quantum physics PhD mathematician can't do math after 70 miles.
Okay, well, then I'm going to do a live dispatch from the river. I will make sure I meet her at the river and I give her like an equation.
Give her something easy. You know,
I only do easy.
Because you have to validate it? Right.
I would have to know the answer.
I tell you, this is going to be a fun year. 2019 is going to be when we talk about in the future. We'll reference back to this. We reference back to all of them. Yeah. What I would really like to do with you sometime, AJW, is since you're such a historian of the race, of race and racers, is just go back and talk about some of these icons, some of these folks. If we had a Ultra Running Hall of Fame, they would be positioned there with statues and busts and stories. And I think that would be a lot of fun to do that.
Oh, I would love to do that someday. That might be a 20-hour streamcast too.
We could just feature you come in with three each or two each, male, female, and we'll just talk.
I want to talk about. We've talked a lot about the people. Mm-hmm. There's one thing about the course I want to talk about.
Oh yeah,
and it's a little thing. But I think it's interesting. It was about 6 years ago now, I think, that Craig and the crew got up to Squaw Valley, and the Squaw Valley people said, "Sorry, you can't put the starting line in the normal place. We've just resodded this grass, and so you have to, and the sprinklers are on, and so you can't do it." So we're literally over about a 36-hour period, they had to switch and they moved the starting line over by those big rocking chairs and they ran around the chairlift building and up the hill. Well, this year, the finish line has a ever so slight reroute, but listeners should know that this year, the infield of Placer High School is off limits. It's all dirt, it's plowed. It's a long-awaited opportunity to put artificial surface on that football field. It has to be done during the summertime. It's being done. So the infield's a big dirt pit. And as a result, the race organization, Craig Thornley and Bob Dickinson, who's the Mr. D, who's the grand poobah of the finish line, have arranged for the runners to actually come around the track in the opposite direction. So track purists out there will probably be upset by this. They're going to be circling the track in a clockwise direction. Ooh. So they're going to come through the gate, come down the hill, and actually make a sharp left. They're still going to do 250 meters around, but they're going to parade in front of John Mettinger and then continue around one more turn and part of the second turn and then finish on that far side. And the reason being is that then the finish could then flow out into the tennis courts in that grassy area and over toward the locker rooms and all that. While it's a little thing, it's something that's going to be unique about this year's race, even though it's 200. Because when you're thinking, well, of course, it's Western States. You have to finish around the track. You have to have the finish banner. You have to have the announcer's booth. You have to have all those things.
Sure.
And it's really interesting to see how it's gonna work out. So, I mean, probably no one else cares about this but me, but I think it's kind of cool that they're going
to
be coming in.
Do you think anybody will get lost and take the wrong, not make the left turn? Do you think they'll have ribbons to make sure that they take a left turn?
They probably will.
They will put somebody there. Hey, we had John Mettinger actually on some of our pre-recorded, and on one of them we had him because Gordy was in the room and sat between us, and we asked John to give an announcement, a finish line announcement, as if Gordy was coming through in 2019. So you guys can tune in and listen to that.
That was really cool.
It was fun. So AJW, you have anything else, Scott? Because I have a final question for AJW.
I did have one, but I forgot what it
okay,
was.
Okay, so here it is.
I wowed you with the,
you did.
The change direction
yeah,
of
yeah,
the track.
Yeah.
AJW, we know how much you love Western States. And we also know that you're a connoisseur of beer. I mean, that's you have the tap room, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And we visited virtually the tap room, and it's beautiful. You've done a lot with it, and we love it. And it's worth going out and seeing.
It's a labor of love.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. If Western States was a beer, which beer would it be?
Well, or would it be a wine?
Well, no, it would have to be...
It's an IPA.
It's an IPA?
No, IPAs, I mean, I like IPAs, but IPAs are a little too bitter.
Oh, okay.
So it would have to be a beer. It would have to be a craft beer. It couldn't be a mass-produced beer, but it could be a beer that was formerly a craft beer that's been bought up by a larger corporation.
And so only 369 bottles get made a year.
So when you think of the founding fathers of the craft beer movement, right? You think of Sierra Nevada,
uh-huh.
You think of Anchor Steam,
mm-hmm.
and you think of Sam Adams. So I think it would be some sort of collaborative brew.
Uh-huh.
If you could get those three brewers together, the chief brewmasters of Sierra Nevada, Anchor Steam, and Sam Adams, you're getting the West and the East Coast together to craft brew a nice pale ale with a slight amber hue and just the right touch of hoppiness, maybe an IBU of like 35, which is probably what an IBU that would have manzanita bushes in it would be. Because you'd have to have, you think about it, you have to have manzanita, you
sure.
have to have dust.
Yes.
You have to have the little bite of poison oak.
Sure.
There's a lot there that you need. Right?
Hey, Don.
Yeah.
The thing I just love about this is I don't think I've put that much thought into anything in my life. And here he puts that much thought into something just off the cuff.
Yes.
I actually didn't think about it. I just started talking.
And that's the gift that Andy has. He just needs to open his mouth. And gold comes out.
Thank you so much for being the prognosticator here on this episode, and we'll keep track. You've got your scorecard at home. You can take a look and compare what's actually happening.
Western States Bingo.
I look forward to being part of the streamcast, both from the field and coming on in here on Saturday night and Sunday morning. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
So go to the Western Page, Trailrunner Nathan. Help me out.
You want me to help you out?
No, wait, I'm going to...
Trail Run. Let me say it and you can just nod.
I know.
TrailRunnerNation.com. Up in the upper left-hand corner, it says WSER Live. Click on that. You're going to have the streamcast, which is a video streamcast. You're going to have ultralive.net, a mirror site on our page mm-hmm. where you can look at the top racers, see where they are.
Search your racer.
Yep. There's a search bar there that you can put in Robidoux's name and see where he is. It also is going to have, we're very, very fortunate to have Brian Powell's I Run Far Twitter is going to be on there, as well as our Twitter and Instagram.
Well, that sounds fantastic. AJW, thank you for another year of prognosticating. Now go out and run.
Mas.
See you in Squaw.